They've been given lots of human descriptions, elderly ladies, tea party. But I just love the cooing sound of the males. The challenge for eider ducks is that they are very wild birds and they can appear to be very tame, and that's one of the problems for them, because currently they're being fed a diet of fish and chips on some of the Northumberland coast towns. They're lacking calcium. Normally eider ducks eat shellfish, not fish and chips, and they're lacking calcium, and so the eggs are failing, and so there's a problem because they're such attractive, friendly birds to feed, and yet the food that we're giving them and bread and things like that is actually causing a dietary problem for these birds.
So, I mean, you could go as far as hoping for a local appeal that people did not feed fish and chips to eider ducks.
I think that's exactly right, Paddy. We should look and listen to them and enjoy them, but try not to feed them.
Let's move on. I'm picturing you with a microphone inching towards a grey seal, also in Northumberland. Why have you been tracking the grey seal?
Grey seals have beautiful, haunting voices, and I think as soon as you hear this sound, you can understand all the stories from centuries ago of harpies and sirens and mermaids with these hauntingly beautiful songs luring sailors that have been at sea for many months, imagining that there are mermaids on the rocks and being drawn to a watery grave by these siren voices. I think we're drawn to sounds like this because they mimic almost our vocal frequencies. So some of these sounds, if you listen to them, they're very human. In fact, they're very childlike. It's quite disturbing, some of these wails and groans and gargles.
Both the eider duck and the grey seal we have compared to have human sound qualities. So let's go in the direction of a truly animal sound, which we can hear roundabout now. It's the red deer stag.
The roaring, rutting calls of red deer stags, which has been echoing around the highlands, certainly during October and into November. And I think it's our largest land animal. It just has all that wonderful sort of rich power and depth to the voice, particularly when you hear it close.
Is it one of those sounds that you would feel in your own rib cage?
Certainly. I think there's an infrasonic element to it. That means the sounds in it that are below our frequency of hearing. So the huge bellows and grunts of a red stag physically moving, I think. And I think that's obviously one of the things that impresses the females, that physical displacement of sound. Mm. The vibrations as much as the sound, actually, I think.
They're the Neil Nunes of the woods.
It's certainly got a bit of real sort of tenor tone to it.
A ghastly, ghostly sound comes from a Death Watch beetle.
Before our time, when we lived in the days of timber-framed houses, those that could afford them, you may be sat up late in the evening, particularly if you were overlooking a relative or friend or child that was sick. You'd be watching them through the night, and the only sound you would hear that late at night, if you're on the death watch, would be this tapping sound emanating unseen from the wooden beams of your building. The males burrow into the wood, and to attract a female, they think there's nothing more attractive than banging their heads on the inside of their little burrows.
God, my goodness me, and they do it by banging their head against a wall.
Yeah, head banging.
Now, Now, we are big fans of Tweet of the Day on Sunday here on BH, but there's a great history of birdsong on the radio in Britain. It seems that when they invented the radio, they quickly decided that it was the perfect place to put band music and bird music.
Of course, yeah. And I'm delighted to be able to reintroduce this to Radio 4. This is the spring display song of a curlew. This is a sound that introduced a very famous programme before my time, and I think probably even before your time, Paddy. In the 1940s, Desmond Hawkins, who went on to found the BBC Natural History Unit, created the programme The Naturalist, and instead of having dreadful music like we have in lots of our wildlife television programmes these days, Desmond Hawkins introduced The Naturalist with this remarkable, beautiful song.
I mean, are you making a call of your own to take music out of natural history programming?
Totally, yeah. I mean, we're just overwhelmed by it. I mean, it's awful. And the strange thing is, if you speak to most people, everybody, in terms of the public, want to hear the sounds of the environment that they're looking at and listening to, rather than being led by the nose with dreadful washes and waves of orchestral music. But a lot of the producers, you know, insist on plastering music all over the programmes. And it's a complete turn-off for me. And I think many people, I'm still not sure why they do it. I actually think it's mostly because a lot of these people have got very short attention spans, and they think that if they don't include something dramatic every few moments, then people will turn off. But it's a great turn-off for me, I'm afraid.